Chapter 4. It's the heat, said Jukes. He weather's awful. It would make a saint swear. Even up here I feel exactly as if I had my head tied up in a woolen blanket. Captain McWhirr looked up. He mean to say, Mr. Jukes, you ever had your head tied up in a blanket? What was that for? It's a manner of speaking, sir, said Jukes, stolidly. Some of you fellows do go on. What's that about saints swearing? I wish you wouldn't talk so wild. What sort of saint would that be that would swear? No more saint than yourself, I expect. And what's a blanket got to do with it, or the weather either? ... The heat does not make me swear, does it? It's filthy bad temper. That's what it is. And what's the good of your talking like this? Thus Captain McWhirr expostulated against the use of images in speech, and at the end electrified Jukes by a contemptuous snort, followed by words of passion and resentment, damn. I'll fire him out of the ship, if he don't look out. And Jukes, incorrigible, thought, goodness me. Somebody's put a new insight to my old man. Here's temper, if you like. Of course it's the weather, what else? It would make an angel quarrelsome, let alone a saint. All the Chinamen on deck appeared at their last gasp. At its setting the sun had a diminished diameter and an expiring brown, rayless glow, as if millions of centuries elapsing since the morning had brought it near its end. A dense bank of cloud became visible to the northward. It had a sinister dark olive tint, and lay low and motionless upon the sea, resembling a solid obstacle in the path of the ship. She went floundering towards it like an exhausted creature driven to its death. The coppery twilight retired slowly, and the darkness brought out overhead a swarm of unsteady big stars, that, as if blown upon, flickered exceedingly and seemed to hang very near the earth. At 8 o'clock Jukes went into the chart room to write up the ship's log. He copies neatly out of the rough book the number of miles, the course of the ship, and in the column 4 in scrawled the word om from top to bottom of the 8 hours since noon. He was exasperated by the continuous, monotonous rolling of the ship. The heavy inkstand would slide away in a manner that suggested perverse intelligence in dodging the pen. Having written in the large space under the head of M-Arcs, eat very oppressive, he stuck the end of the pen holder in his teeth, pipe fashion, and mopped his face carefully. Ship rolling heavily in a high cross swell, he began again, and commented to himself, heavily is no word for it. Then he wrote sunset threatening, with a low bank of clouds to end, and the sky clear overhead. Sprawling over the table with arrested pen, he glanced out of the door, and in that frame of his vision he saw all the stars flying upwards between the teakwood jams on a black sky. The whole lot took flight together and disappeared, leaving only a blackness flecked with white flashes, for the sea was as black as the sky and speckled with foam afar. The stars that had flown to the roll came back on the return swing of the ship, rushing downwards in their glittering multitude, not of fiery points, but enlarged to tiny disks brilliant with a clear wet sheen. Jukes watched the flying big stars for a moment, and then wrote, 8 p.m. swell increasing. Ship laboring and taking water on her decks. Battened down the coolies for the night. Barometer still falling. He paused, and thought to himself, perhaps nothing whatever'll come of it. And then he closed resolutely his entries every appearance of a typhoon coming on. On going out he had to stand aside, and Captain McWhirr strode over the doorstep without saying a word or making a sign. Shut the door, Mr. Jukes, will you? He cried from within. Jukes turned back to do so, muttering ironically, afraid to catch cold, I suppose. It was his watch below, but he yearned for communion with his kind, and he remarked cheerily to the second mate, doesn't look so bad, after all, does it? The second mate was marching to and fro on the bridge, tripping down with small steps one moment, and the next climbing with difficulty the shifting slope of the deck. At the sound of Juke's voice he stood still, facing forward, but made no reply. Hallo! That's a heavy one, said Jukes, swaying to meet the long roll till his lowered hand touched the planks. This time the second mate made in his throat a noise of an unfriendly nature. He was an oldish, shabby little fellow, with bad teeth, and no hair on his face. He had been shipped in a hurry in Shanghai. That trip when the second officer brought from home had delayed the ship 3 hours in port, by contriving in some manner Captain McWhirr could never understand, to fall overboard into an empty coal lighter lying alongside, and had to be sent ashore to the hospital with concussion of the brain, and a broken limb or two. Jukes was not discouraged by the unsympathetic sound. He Chinaman must be having a lovely time of it down there, he said. It's lucky for them the old girl has the easiest role of any ship I've ever been in. There now. This one wasn't so bad. You wait, snarled the second mate. With his sharp nose, red at the tip, and his thin pinched lips, he always looked as though he were raging inwardly, and he was concise in his speech to the point of rudeness. All his time off duty he spent in his cabin with the door shut, keeping so still in there that he was supposed to fall asleep as soon as he had disappeared. But the man who came in to wake him for his watch on deck would invariably find him with his eyes wide open, flat on his back in the bunk, and glaring irritably from a soiled pillow. He never wrote any letters, did not seem to hope for news from anywhere. And though he had been heard once to mention West Hartlepool, it was with extreme bitterness, and only in connection with the extortionate charges of a boarding house. He was one of those men who are picked up at need in the ports of the world. They are competent enough, appear hopelessly hard up, show no evidence of any sort of vice, and carry about them all the signs of manifest failure. They come aboard on an emergency, care for no ship afloat, live in their own atmosphere of casual connection amongst their shipmates who know nothing of them, and make up their minds to leave at inconvenient times. They clear out with no words of leave-taking in some godforsaken port other men would fear to be stranded in, and go ashore in company of a shabby sea chest, corded like a treasure box, and with an air of shaking the ship's dust off their feet. You wait, he repeated, balanced in great swings with his back to Jukes, motionless and implacable. Do you mean to say we are going to catch it hot? Asked Jukes with boyish interest. Say? I say nothing. You don't catch me, snapped the little second mate, with a mixture of pride, scorn, and cunning, as if Jukes' question had been a trap cleverly detected. H, no. None of you here shall make a fool of me, if I know it, he mumbled to himself. Jukes reflected rapidly that this second mate was a mean little beast, and in his heart he wished poor Jack Allen had never smashed himself up in the coal lighter. The far-off blackness ahead of the ship was like another night seen through the starry night of the earth, the starless night of the immensities beyond the created universe, revealed in its appalling stillness through a low fissure in the glittering sphere, of which the earth is the kernel. Whatever there might be about, said Jukes, we are steaming straight into it. You've said it, caught up the second mate, always with his back to Jukes. Who have said it, mind not I. Oh, go to Jericho, said Jukes, frankly, and the other emitted a triumphant little chuckle. You've said it, he repeated. And what of that? I've known some real good men get into trouble with their skippers for saying a damn sight less, answered the second mate feverishly. H, no. You don't catch me. You seem deucedly anxious not to give yourself away, said Jukes, completely soured by such absurdity. I wouldn't be afraid to say what I think. I, to me, that's no great trick. I am nobody, and well I know it. The ship, after a pause of comparative steadiness, started upon a series of rolls, one worse than the other, and for a time Jukes, preserving his equilibrium, was too busy to open his mouth. As soon as the violent swinging had quieted down somewhat, he said, this is a bit too much of a good thing. Whether anything is coming or not, I think she ought to be put head on to that swell. The old man has just gone in to lie down. hang me if I don't speak to him. But when he opened the door of the chart room, he saw his captain reading a book. Captain McWhirr was not lying down. He was standing up with one hand grasping the edge of the bookshelf, and the other holding open before his face a thick volume. The lamp wriggled in the gimbals, the loosened books toppled from side to side on the shelf, the long barometer swung in jerky circles, the table altered its slant every moment. In the midst of all this stir and movement, Captain McWhirr, holding on, showed his eyes above the upper edge, and asked, "What's the matter?" "Swell getting worse, sir." "Noticed that in here," muttered Captain McWhirr. "Anything wrong?" Jukes, inwardly disconcerted by the seriousness of the eyes looking at him over the top of the book, produced an embarrassed grin. "Rolling like old boots," he said, sheepishly. "Aye. Very heavy, very heavy. What do you want?" At this, Jukes lost his footing and began to flounder. I was thinking of our passengers," he said, in the manner of a man clutching at a straw. "Passengers?" wondered the captain, gravely. "What passengers?" "Why, the Chinaman, sir," explained Jukes, very sick of this conversation. "The Chinaman. Why don't you speak plainly? Couldn't tell what you meant. Never heard a lot of coolies spoken of as passengers before. Passengers, indeed. What's come to you?" Captain McWhirr, closing the book on his forefinger, lowered his arm and looked completely mystified. "Why are you thinking of the Chinaman, Mr. Jukes?" he inquired. Jukes took a plunge, like a man driven to it. "He's rolling her decks full of water, sir. Thought you might put her head on perhaps for a while. Till this goes down a bit very soon, I dare say. Head to the eastward. I never knew a ship roll like this." He held on in the doorway, and Captain McWhirr, feeling his grip on the shelf inadequate, made up his mind to let go in a hurry and fell heavily on the couch. "Head to the eastward?" he said, struggling to sit up. "That's more than 4 points off her course." "Yes, sir. 50 degrees. Would just bring her head far enough round to meet this." Captain McWhirr was now sitting up. He had not dropped the book, and he had not lost his place. "To the eastward?" he repeated, with dawning astonishment. Where do you think we are bound to? You want me to haul a full-powered steamship 4 points off her course to make the Chinaman comfortable? Now, I've heard more than enough of mad things done in the world but this. If I didn't know you, Jukes, I would think you were in liquor. Steer 4 points off. And what afterwards? Steer 4 points over the other way, I suppose, to make the course good. What put it into your head that I would start to tack a steamer as if she were a sailing ship? Jolly good thing she isn't, threw in Jukes, with bitter readiness. He would have rolled every blessed stick out of her this afternoon. Aye. And you just would have had to stand and see them go, said Captain McWhirr, showing a certain animation. Tea's a dead calm, isn't it? It is, sir. But there's something out of the common coming, for sure. Maybe. I suppose you have a notion I should be getting out of the way of that dirt, said Captain McWhirr, speaking with the utmost simplicity of manner and tone, and fixing the oilcloth on the floor with a heavy stare. Thus he noticed neither Jukes' discomfiture, nor the mixture of vexation and astonished respect on his face. Now, here's this book, he continued with deliberation, slapping his thigh with the closed volume. I've been reading the chapter on the storms there. This was true. He had been reading the chapter on the storms. When he had entered the chart room, it was with no intention of taking the book down. Some influence in the air, the same influence, probably, that caused the steward to bring without orders the captain's sea boots and oilskin coat up to the chart room and as it were guided his hand to the shelf, and without taking the time to sit down he had waded with a conscious effort into the terminology of the subject. He lost himself amongst advancing semicircles, left and right hand quadrants, the curves of the tracks, the probable bearing of the center, the shifts of wind and the readings of barometer. He tried to bring all these things into a definite relation to himself, and ended by becoming contemptuously angry with such a lot of words, and with so much advice, all legwork and supposition, without a glimmer of certitude. "It's the damnedest thing, Jukes," he said. "If a fellow was to believe all that's in there, he would be running most of his time all over the sea trying to get behind the weather." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.